Yeah, hello everyone. Yes, I recognized immediately when I came into the room Brent's voice. Brent is now a dear friend of mine, as well as his wife, Sydney. They live just 20 minutes down the road from us. And they're in our course group. And Miracles in the Mountains was the first time Brent had spoken in a long time. But we always enjoy when he chooses to speak up at our course group. And you can kind of see it in his eyes. He starts leaning forward and his eyes get this certain look and you know he has something to share. And so if he doesn't speak up on his own, I say, Brent, you got something to say? And and then we sit back and listen. He's wonderful. Right now we are here for 7 Steps to Awakening. And tonight I am going to begin with quote 572. But I feel like some music first. So, Brent Haskell was just talking about the game of this world, and he was saying in order to win the game, you have to die, meaning the ego death, which he calls letting go of any value that you would defend. You know, and really it's letting go and letting go and letting go until there's nothing left to let go of. So the song I'm going to play is by Francesca Battistelli, and it is called I'm Letting Go.
My heart beats standing on the edge. My feet have finally left the land. But I cannot go back. There's no turning back. I'm letting go.
Some of you may know that one of the ways that I contemplate is listening to music, and I have a lot of really, really good songs that I can contemplate too. And often when I'm listening, whether I'm listening to a teaching like I was listening to Brent Haskell a moment ago, or if I'm listening to a song, like I was listening to Francesca Battistelli right now, or even when I'm listening within to my own heart, as I am right this moment as I speak. When I'm listening and contemplating, I often close my eyes. Closing my eyes reduces distraction. And the reason I close my eyes to reduce distraction is because in my heart, I don't want to be distracted. There's something very, very beautiful here. There's a wonderful opportunity being offered here. But the ego isn't interested. And most of us, if not all of us, still have what A Course in Miracles calls a split mind, which means part of our mind, and some would even argue part of our heart, is still aligned with ego. And so if we aren't careful, if we aren't attentive, we are easily distracted. And there's nothing wrong with that. And by that I mean, you know, we're not guilty for being distracted. It's just that when we're distracted, we're taken away from what we truly want the most. From our heart's desire. I would imagine that nearly everyone here, if not everyone here, has been in that space. Whether you're in that space through meditation, through contemplation, through listening, through being with a particular teacher. I would imagine that everyone has been in that space where you were just fully embraced by whatever it is that we can't name it. You know, some people call it Holy Spirit, but that's only one name. But fully embraced by it, the heart, right where you want to be, home, heaven. We all know that. We all have been there. And so because we've tasted it, we know. It's not a question anymore. We know it's what we want the most. There's a chapter in the Tao Te Ching. Let me see if I can find it really quickly. It's actually, I think, quite humorous. Kathy, you did a great interpretation of this one the other night. It was the one where you talked about cheesecake. Here we go. This is chapter 35 from the Tao Te Ching. Listen to this. She who is centered in the Tao can go where she wishes without danger. She perceives the universal harmony even amid great pain because she has found peace in her heart. Music or the smell of good cooking may make people stop and enjoy. But words that point to the Tao seem monotonous and without flavor. When you look for it, there is nothing to see. When you listen for it, there is nothing to hear. When you use it, it is inexhaustible. What I hear in this particular chapter of the Tao Te Ching again is, you know, most of us here, if not all of us here, have a split mind, which means the ego still has at least some degree of influence. And the ego looks for what I'm going to call very temporary, very immediate pleasure. Very surface level feeling is how it feels to me. Very surface level. So, as Kathy was saying the other night, you know, she's saying something about how, cheesecake can be so wonderful. You know, it's, you know, like when you taste it, it tastes so good. And, you know, she did a better job than I am of sharing her contemplation about the cheesecake. But, you know, the Tao, You know, it's nothing. Sometimes she says, sometimes I sit down to contemplate the Tao, I don't feel anything. I don't get anything. But cheesecake is always rewarding. Of course, she was being a bit of a comedian. You know, the comedian in her was coming out in her contemplation. But we all know that when the heart touches that, it's so much more fulfilling than cheesecake. Yeah, I was reading from the Stephen Mitchell translation. It's so much more fulfilling than Snickers, than potato chips, than beer, than anything. Than television shows, than gossip. Think of anything that the ego gets pleasure in. And none of it has that depth of satisfaction that we get when we are fully in the heart, or fully in the spirit, or fully in the self. And yes, I was reading from the Stephen Mitchell translation of the Tao Te Ching. The reason I'm being quiet for a moment is I'm looking, you know, so I want to say I prefer not to be distracted. And depending on how you look at that, that's either a truth or a lie. You see, the reason that statement, I prefer not to be distracted, is either a truth or a lie, is it depends on what I means. I still have a split mind. And the ego prefers to be distracted. The ego wants the cheesecake. Today I had peanut butter and chocolate cracker jacks. They were very good. Last night I had deep fried Reese's. It was very good. The ego wants any kind of distraction it can find. So if I say I prefer not to be distracted, but I'm speaking from the ego, I'm lying. But I'm telling the truth if I'm speaking from the heart. And when I speak from the heart, there's some kind of a feeling where I can feel that I am at the core of who I am. You know, when I'm the ego, I may think that's who I am. But when I'm in the heart, I can feel this is the core of who I am. And I can feel that I prefer not to be distracted. That that's a truth. And that when distraction seems to be my preference, it's only because I've temporarily forgotten who I am. I've temporarily forgotten my heart. I've temporarily forgotten what I truly want. But when I remember, I know it. It's not a question. Since the sage has no creed of his own, he never engages in useless discussions. Sri Ramana Maharshi. Projection is a distraction, yeah. No doubt about it. Jamie is snoring. So I have some background music here, and I'm going to begin reading now from the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is the primary purpose for why I showed up tonight. I do have something to tell you, but maybe I should tell you at the end instead of in the middle of a recording. So let me go directly to the Seven Steps to Awakening. Hopefully I'll remember to tell you at the end. If anybody here wants to be my keeper, feel free just a couple minutes before six to remind me I had something I wanted to share. Kind of a you know, an awakening together business-like type thing. All right, so 572 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. We're reading the quotes from Step 3 from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I take my stand where no difference exists, where things are not, nor the minds that create them. There I am at home. That's interesting. I don't remember where I was. I don't remember if I was here in the room with you or if I was in an MPP class, you know, with the people who are currently taking the Tao Te Ching or the people who were taking Jesus of the New Testament. I don't remember where I was, but I remember I was with someone recently in Pal Talk, maybe not this room. And we talked about opinions. I remember mentioning that as my mind was watching the news last week, you know, with the story of what was happening or what is happening in Ferguson, Missouri. And, you know, it offers so many opportunities to have opinions about who's right and who's wrong, who's telling the truth, who's not telling the truth. And my mind was trying to come up with opinions. My mind was offering opinions. My mind was telling me what I think. Presenting itself as me, telling me what I think. But what was happening right after each opinion was presented was that something else in my mind, what we would call the right mind, began to speak, and it was practicing what I would call automatic self-inquiry. And it was basically asking, you know, who has this opinion, or where is this opinion coming from? I don't remember the exact question. But what I remember is as the self-inquiry happened, I would look and I would see that the opinion was coming from the mind. And when I looked at it and saw that clearly, I didn't identify with the opinion and so it vanished. With that said, listen to Nisargadatta Maharaj. Listen again. I take my stand where no difference exists. Whenever we have an opinion, aren't we identifying a difference and picking a side? I take my stand where no difference exists. If you see no difference, you can't pick a side. You can't have an opinion. And that's what that automatic self-inquiry was doing. It was placing me in this space that Nisargadatta speaks of. It was placing me there instead of providing me the opportunity to identify with an idea and think I had an opinion. I take my stand where no difference exists, where things are not, nor the minds that create them. There I am at home. All right, I think I posted a link in the room just a moment ago to my journal, but I'll go ahead and do it again. And I'm going to go to my journal and see what I wrote when I originally contemplated this quote, which would have been a couple of years ago. Ah, but looky here. 2 years ago, this quote took me to the same place that it took me today. Gosh, it's almost exactly 2 years ago. Look at the date. It is exactly 2 years ago. Isn't today August 26th? The date on this journal entry is August 26, 2012. And when I contemplated this quote on that day, I wrote, "Who am I? Am I one with this opinion? Or am I one with that opinion? Where do I stand? Stand between the two in no opinion. Realize the pull to take a stand is ego. Then stand empty." stand empty in no opinion. What's interesting, if you haven't tried this yet, oh, today's the 24th? Okay, well, close. One thing I'm really bad at is dates. Anybody who listens to me very much at all will figure out days, dates, all that kind of stuff, not good at. Almost exactly 2 years ago then. But anybody who's ever felt the guidance to let go of an opinion, anybody who's ever felt the guidance to kind of stand in that space in the middle where, as Nisargadatta says, no difference exists, therefore you can't pick a side. It's a non-thinking space. You see, it takes the mind, takes the thinking of the mind to find the two different perspectives, if there are only two. Sometimes there are many. It takes the thinking of the mind to look at those different perspectives, analyze those different perspectives, make judgments about those different perspectives. The space where there is no difference is the space of no mind. Non-thinking, we could call it. Just being, we could call it. And anybody who's ever made the decision to stand there in the face of an opportunity for an opinion has probably felt that pull to have an opinion. The mind really wants us to identify with an opinion. And if you watch it long enough, you'll notice, humorously, that if we don't take the bait and identify with one side of a controversy, if we stay in the space long enough and we don't take the bait, the ego will actually change and it will start offering us bait from the other side of the controversy. And when you see that happen, you realize the ego doesn't care at all which opinion you take. Just take a damn opinion, it says. Because it doesn't want you standing in the space of nothingness. It wants you to identify with something. It wants you to think you are someone. It wants to think that you are separate from someone else. It wants you to fill that space, yes. So again, 572 in the journal says, who am I? Am I one with this opinion? Or am I one with that opinion? Where do I stand? Stand between the two, in no opinion. Realize the pull to take a stand is ego. Then stand empty. And with that, I'm going to scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 573 in my journal. And I am bringing that link to you in case anybody wants it. But if you're already in the journal, you can also just scroll down and click on 573. And I'm going to go ahead and read the next Sri Nisargadatta quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. As long as you do not see that it is mere habit built on memory, prompted by desire, you will think yourself to be a person. Living, feeling, thinking, active, passive, pleased, or pained. Question yourself. Ask yourself, is it so? Who am I? What is behind and beyond all this? And soon you will see your mistake. I talked a moment ago about the split mind that maybe all of us still has, which means the ego still has some influence in the mind. And of course, if that's true, then you know that part of the time, we live a little closer to ego, or maybe even all the way in ego. And part of the time, we kind of take the time, the awareness, to drop into the heart or to drop into inspiration, and we're deeper into our true self. So we can kind of be in one place or the other. Can't be in both simultaneously, but we can go back and forth between the two. And, you know, this particular quote again is asking us to question whether we're a person or not, and question, who am I, and question what's behind or beyond all this. And what I find is that if I'm closer to the ego or in the ego, when I ask those questions, they just sound like a bunch of, poppycock, crap. You know, to the ego, this world is very, very real. I most definitely am this person. This body, this personality, this mind, every bit of it is what I am. And to start questioning it is just to try and pull in some fantasy. Some fantasy that the truth, which is the world, is not true. That's the ego's point of view. But I find something completely different if I'm in my heart when the inquiry happens. If there's something very attentive to the heart in me. I find that the heart has a way of showing me, a way that I can't explain, but a way of showing me that it could not possibly be this personality, these thoughts, these emotions, this body. It's like the most obvious thing in the world. And probably the best way that the clarity shows me that is by really showing me that anything that I can look at is not what I am, that I'm the one looking. And it shows me over and over again how I can look at emotions, look at thought, look at form, look at personality, look at, and it keeps asking kind of where am I looking from, who's looking, what's looking. And when it does that, I know I'm not the mind because I am looking at the mind, but I can't tell you really what I am. I can't tell you what I am because it's not an object. You see, if I was the mind, but then I could say, oh, I'm the mind, I'm these thoughts, right? That's very easy to say, but it's not true because I'm looking at it. There's something here that is what I am that is looking at the mind, looking at the thoughts, looking at the emotions, looking at everything. And what's looking, I can't tell you. Now, people have words for it. They call it awareness. They call it consciousness. And I can adopt any of those words just like anyone else can. But I can't really tell you what it is because it's, all I know is that it's what I am. It's me completely naked. You know, like if you take away everything, take away the senses, take away the thoughts, the beliefs, the concepts, take away the emotions, it still remains, and it's what I am. And I see it clearly when the inquiry happens with what we could call the right mind, or in spirit, or inspired. So again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, as long as you do not see that it is mere habit. Again, when we're closer to ego or in ego, we don't see that it's mere habit. You know, then it's kind of a fact. This is who I am, and this is my thought, and this is my opinion, and this is what I think of you, and this is what I think of me. It all seems kind of factual and right. And to question it seems silly, because I think I know who I am. As long as you do not see that it is mere habit. Gosh, think about that. It's a habit for me to think I am the mind. A habit for me to think I am the personality. A habit for me not to question it with the right mind. a habit not to really, really look in a very deep way and inquire. As long as I fall for the habit, I keep thinking I know. I know who I am. I know what I think. I know what I like. I know who you are. I know what you're likely to do or not do. I can predict your behavior. Right? As long as you do not see that it is mere habit built on memory, prompted by desire, you will think yourself to be a person. Living, feeling, thinking, active, passive, pleased, or pained. Question yourself. Ask yourself, is it so? But I recommend that you do that during a contemplative time, when something very deep, something beyond the mind can come and show you in a way that you need to be shown that it couldn't be so. Just kind of casually asking it while you're caught up in ego, it doesn't have the same oomph. Question yourself, ask yourself, is it so? Ask your inner self, is it so? Ask your heart, the core of who you are, is it so that I am a person? Is it so that I am these thoughts? Is it so that I am this emotional makeup? That I am this mind? Question yourself, ask yourself, is it so? Who am I? What is behind and beyond all this? And soon you will see your mistake. Yeah, Robbie says he's talking about the sweet spot that Jay mentioned this morning. I said that was a great description of it. When you're in that place that is home, the sweet spot. Yeah, be there when you're doing the questioning, and what it will show you is amazing. It will show you beyond doubt that you can't be these things. You can't be the emotions, the thinking, the body. Kathy says the untethered soul spoke of that today too. Yeah, you can't be me reacting to myself. I'm going to go to the journal and see what I wrote almost 2 years ago, right? Let's see, that would be 1 year and 363 days ago, right? The idea, I am a person, is a sticky idea. As clarity and wisdom shine through, I am a person will want to identify with them and say, I am wise. Wisdom may pass through, but wisdom is not meant to be claimed. The idea of claiming wisdom is merely another disguise of I am a person. One thing that's really, really wonderful about sitting down and contemplating something is that if you really get into that space, that sweet spot that Jay talks about, whatever right interpretation that is most helpful for you now will arise. When we are in the Awakening Together Minister Preparation Program, and we're contemplating lots of different things like the Bhagavad Gita, the Tao Te Ching, Sufi teachings, Kabbalah teachings, Ramana Maharshi, the New Testament, just on and on and on. Sometimes some of the participants tell me they know what they wrote isn't right. My only question is it right-minded? If it's right-minded, it's right. Because your inner teacher will always give you the right-minded interpretation that's best for you now. And sure, a year from now you might read the same quote and get a different interpretation. And a year after that, the same quote and get a different interpretation. But you know what? They're all right. If they're all what wisdom could pull out of that quote for you now, the interpretation it could give for you now that is most helpful in the shifting that needs to occur in you now. If it is right-minded, it is right. And the reason I say that is because as I look at 573 now, what I wrote in the journal a year and 363 days ago, it is not an interpretation that I was seeing now. And I'm sure it was not an interpretation that I am seeing now because I don't need that interpretation. I remember that hump. I remember being on the side of the hill where I wanted to claim wisdom as mine. You know, when I was writing it, can it be right if it's heard through frustration? I'm going to come back to that question, Kathy. I want to finish what I'm saying, but I will come back to that. I was writing wisdom when I was in that sweet spot, as Jay would say. But then, you know, later, when I moved a little closer back to ego, into ego, I guess is more fair to say, I would then want to claim that wisdom as mine. There was a pridefulness about it. I remember that. And what I did, because I wanted to be free of that pridefulness, is I said a prayer. I remember very distinctly saying the prayer. I don't remember the date when I said the prayer, but I remember the day. I remember saying the prayer. And I just asked, please take this pride away from me. Just please take it. And somehow around that time, a miracle occurred because the pride ceased to be. And when it ceased to be, I started to see differently. You know, you always see differently with every shift. And what I started to see is every single person who spoke or wrote clarity, I saw it as mine. Not mine in the possessive sense. You see, it was mine in the possessive sense when I had that pride, when it was Regina's. Regina wrote this, this is mine, my wisdom. The mine that came after the prayer was a universal mine. Regina disappeared into that. There was no Regina in that mind. I saw whether Muji said it was mine, or whether Dove said it was mine. Bentino said it was mine. You know, if Teddy said it was mine. It was all mine. It was all the same one, the same clarity. There was no difference. And that just became more and more and more solid in me. So that now that sense of pride, that sense of me and wisdom is not there at all. So that's a shift that occurred somewhere in the last year and 363 days. Because when I wrote this, I was still on the other side of the hill awaiting the shift. You can tell by what was written. The idea, I am a person, is a sticky idea. That is still true. But look what came next. As clarity and wisdom shine through, I am a person will want to identify with them and say, I am wise. Wisdom may pass through, but wisdom is not meant to be claimed. Wisdom may pass through, but wisdom is not meant to be claimed. The idea of claiming wisdom is merely another disguise, just another disguise of I am a person. I am a clear person is still I am a person. I am an enlightened person is still I am a person. But you know what? So is I'm a completely confused person. It's the same I'm a person as I'm a clear person. So is I'm a completely unenlightened person. I'm a completely unconscious person, a completely asleep person. I am a person that will never get it. I am a person that will never hear Holy Spirit. It's the same person. What we're to let go of is the idea, I am a person. So again, returning back to Nisargadatta 573, as long as you do not see that it is mere habit, built on memory, prompted by desire, the desire to be something, right? You will think yourself to be a person. Living, feeling, thinking, active, passive, pleased or pained, I would add clear or not clear. Wise or confused, still a person. You see, it's just a habit. You know, wisdom comes, we're in the sweet spot, and when we're in the sweet spot, we get that wisdom. We get it clearly in those moments. But then we get up, we walk away from the chair, we kind of drift back over into our ego, and then we claim that wisdom. You see? We haven't let go of I'm a person. So what do we do with that? Beat ourselves up because we notice we're feeling proud over something that came through our mouth or was written by our pen? No. You know, Adyashanti had a major shift. A shift that was some type of awakening, you know. Not exactly sure what, but it was some type of awakening. It was a major, major shift. And after he had the shift, he went to a Buddhist retreat and he was meditating with some others. And what he saw showing up in his mind was something like, you know, I get it and they don't. You know, I'm in the stillness and they're not. I know who I am. And this arrogance about his shift began to arise. And he says this arrogance really bothered him because he didn't want to have the arrogance. But what he found was that the only thing he could do was sit and watch the arrogance from the observer point of view until it died, until it just wasn't there anymore. Said another way is he chose not to identify with it. He chose not to take on the I am a person, I am the more enlightened person. He chose not to take that idea on. It was being offered, but he chose not to take that on, and he stayed in the space where there is no difference, where there is no opinion, where there is no person. He stayed in the space watching the invitation to become arrogant until the invitation passed. How beautiful is that? I talked this morning about ego as self-interest. And you can hear the self-interest in wanting to be the clear one, the wise one, the teacher, the enlightened one. You know, you can hear the self-interest in that. There's a me there. A me that wants to be looked at by other people and thought about in a certain way. A me that wants to perceive myself in a certain way. That's not it. That's ego. That's not it. When we see that arising, this I want to be seen as the teacher, I want to be the one that says wise things, I want people to think I'm spiritual. You know, when we see that arising in whatever way it arises, we do well to remember what we truly want, to drop into the sweet spot, and then to sit in the sweet spot watching the invitation to arrogance without accepting it. Don't repress it. Anything you try to repress is still there. Let me go back to Kathy's question before I forget. It's already, let's see, where was it, Kathy? let me scroll back up. Can it be right if it is heard through frustration? Oh, absolutely. It can still be right-minded. In fact, when I was writing with Holy Spirit, like writing NTI, even when I was writing what came through the seven steps to awakening, I often felt extreme resistance, which could be experienced as frustration. Once when writing the teachings of Inner Ramana, the message wasn't even done, and I just quit, and I literally threw the notebook across the room. I did not want any more. It was like ripping my skin off of my body. I could not take it. And yet it was perfectly right. I just wasn't fully ready in that moment. And fortunately, when I went back to it and read it at another time, I saw how right it was. The code is another one. The code, when the code came, it was 2 days, I think, before I even posted it. It seems like I might have even ripped it out of my notebook, wadded it up and threw it away, and then had to take it back out of the trash. But I'm not sure if that's true. That might have just been that I wanted to do that. You know, memories can be very false. Extreme resistance, extreme frustration, and very right-minded. So you can't judge by how you feel, as you're writing, as to whether what you're writing is right-minded or not. My recommendation is always, when you're in contemplation and you're writing, just write. Just write. And if you need to, go back and look at it later. You know, you might feel completely different about it, but don't judge and write. If you judge and write, judgment is ego. Every time you judge what you're writing, you're inviting ego in. And if you judge and write, ego is going to find a way to make sure that it closes up that pipeline and you don't get the wisdom. So just write. Just let it flow, even if you have strong resistance. So again, I'll read 573 one more time, and then I remember I said there was something I wanted to tell you, so I'll shift over to that before I have to let go of the mic. So 573 from my journal said, "The idea I am a person is a sticky idea. As clarity and wisdom shine through, I am a person will want to identify with them and say, I am wise. Wisdom may pass through, but wisdom is not meant to be claimed. The idea of claiming wisdom is merely another disguise of I am the person. And if we follow Nisargadatta's advice, when we see the desire to claim arising, we would want to start questioning ourselves. Is it so? Is it so that I am the wise one here? Who am I? What is behind and beyond all this?" He says, "And soon you will see your mistake." All right, the announcement I wanted to share this morning, when we were in gathering, I mentioned that Nikki Dobson is going to begin offering True Discernment, the MPP program. First, there's the intro to MPP, which she's going to offer on the 3rd and the 10th of September. I think I might have said this morning those were Thursdays. They're actually Wednesdays. And then later in September, she'll begin offering True Discernment. Let's see, I have the dates right here. September 24th. And she'll offer True Discernment each week through December 10th. Just skipping the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, because this is on Wednesdays. And her classes are in the morning. So we have classes being offered in the morning on Wednesday, starting right after Labor Day. Well, since then, David Hemphill has also offered to offer those same classes in the same weeks, but at night, on Tuesday nights, which I know will work for some of you. Some of you will do better with nighttime classes because of your work schedules. Some of you will do better with daytime classes. So now we have them being offered both. So you have two options. So to get the exact dates, go to awakening-together.org, click on classes, and you'll see something like, I think it says register now, intro to MPP. You can click on that. You can get the dates, your date options for Intro to MPP, which needs to be taken first, but it's a 2-hour free class. And then you can look underneath that for notes on when the True Discernment class will be. All right, I need to go. I went over a minute, so I'll let go of the mic, and I'll see you all another time. Bye-bye.